This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. I heard about the Virginia State Liars Contest while listening to Mel Lee's Saturday morning show, Songbag, on our sister station, WEMC. This led me eventually to having the following conversation with former Virginia State champion liar for 2 years running, Stanton's Max Swift.
Well, there's a story behind that. All right. The whole idea that VASA, Virginia Storytelling Alliance, for years did not have a liar's contest. But in West Virginia, they have this wonderful one at the state fair. And a guy named Bill Lepp won it over and over and over until he sort of retired from it. But now he's a professional storyteller, very successful, and one of the best tall tellers you'll ever hear. So we decided we could have our own festival and of lies, and maybe we could find a Bill Lepp. So about 5 years ago, they had one down in Salem, sponsored by a wonderful organization called Hope Tree, and they awarded it I don't even know who they awarded the first one to, because I didn't hear about it. But then the next year, they had the second one at the same place, and that's the one that I was the winner of. Then the Hope Tree group gave it up because it was not economically successful, and they were using it for a fundraiser. So they gave it up. So the next year went by, and nobody had a contest, so I was still the champion. And so halfway through this year, I thought, now, wait a minute, I need to pass. They give you a golden shovel. That's your prize. And I said, I need to pass this golden shovel on to a new teller. So very quickly, the Shenandoah Storytelling Guild, three of us had a committee meeting, and we said we can do it. And so we pooled our resources, sort of, and the bank, City National Bank, sponsored us, gave us a little money, which made it great. And we just sent out on the newsletter that we were having a contest, and people showed up. People showed up to hear it, which for storytellers is wonderful. And we did it. So I'm real happy. And I presented that golden shovel. It's not in the corner of my studio anymore.
All right. I have a question for you that my husband told me to ask you. Charlie. Charlie said to ask you, when he heard you had told me that you had won the state contest right. as best liar, he said, how am I supposed to know that if a liar is telling me they won a contest?
That's truth, yes.
So how do I know that?
People always want to know, is that a liar? Is that the truth? And of course, when you tell stories to kids, afterwards, always, one of them is going to walk up to you and say, is that story true? I mean, it can have giants and ogres in it and everything else. And my answer is, all my stories are true and none of them are true.
This is billed as the Virginia Liars Contest. Mm-hmm. In the context of this competition, what's a lie?
Well, it's a story that's sort of unbelievable. Something happens that you just can't accept. You know it could never happen, and yet you tell the story, and it sounds like, gosh, that could have happened. And then when it's all over, you think, darn, he fooled me. And that's kind of the way the whole thing works. You try to start the story very normal, just like almost like a conversation, telling about Uncle Charlie, you know. But in the end, Uncle Charlie does something unbelievable, and it becomes a tall tale. So that means that a lot of the stories, my wife and I are tandem tellers, and we tell stories at schools and things like that. Many of our stories really are tall tales because, they're about giants and dragons and things like that.
But, good stuff.
But we tell those to children. And so when you get to a liar's contest, that's for grown-ups. These are stories that are a little more subtle, and kids don't really have much interest in them. And so it's our way, really, of getting to an adult audience. That's what we like to do, because most people, you say storytelling to them, what do they think? Children.
How'd you get into this line of work?
My wife says I was born a tall tale. I grew up in an area of the country where it was still taking place in the 40s and 50s when I was a kid, and I heard the actual old-timers tell the stories. Before electricity, storytelling was their radio, their TV, their computer, everything. I mean, all they had was storytelling. And almost every family had a storyteller. And then every community had one. And, you know, they would go around. If a group got together for whatever, they would hear a story from somebody or other, and they knew it. And so I grew up hearing those. My grandfather.
Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Mountain City, Tennessee, which is a very colorful name for a storyteller.
It is.
But I didn't live there until I was only 5 years old or something like that. And then I grew up in Elizabethton, Tennessee.
What was the town like?
It's a small town, smaller than Harrisonburg, more like maybe Withville or something like that.
All right.
So it was a small town. But my grandfather lived out in the country, and he had 9 children. And whenever they could, they would all get together and go to his house for Sunday supper, or Sunday dinner. All 9 of them and their wives and their children. So, you know, we got cousins. My grandfather was the storyteller. Everybody knew he was. And the men would eat first, and then the children would eat, and then the women would eat. So at the men's table, when Granddad got ready to, he would pass the food. But while he was doing that, he would start in on a story. You knew he was going to do it. And he would tell a story, and about the time they got their food, then that would remind Uncle Charlie of a story, and then that would remind Daddy Rod of a story, and pretty soon everybody had told a story. And along toward the end, it would go back to Granddad, and he would tell the closing story. And I used to stand and wait for my turn to eat, because I was a kid, you see, and I picked up on that pattern of what they were doing. I thought, wow, how about that? And I heard all these stories. So later, I took the stories I had heard and started telling them to my little brother, and then to my kids, and then to other people's kids, and now I'm a storyteller.
Tell me what makes a good story.
For me, I want to tell a story that I love. I thought, wow, that is really neat. And, you know, I want to share this with somebody. And then at that point, it just starts out with one time it was a boy named Jack, and he lived in a shack with his mama. And they were real poor, you know, just that way. And then we get into Jack's adventures. And then in the end, Jack gets out of it one way or the other. And we say, well, that's my story about Jack. Or Jack's doing real fine with his mama. That's one thing we do. We say that. So
we left off. You were a grandkid waiting around the table for this sort of storytelling cycle, I guess, to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're sitting here across from me. Give me the nickel tour of what happened between that grandkid and you today, a champion liar.
Well, I grew up. And when I was in high school. I was just past 16. I remember that because I had just got my driver's license. My mama sent me to the store, and that was great because I got to drive the car. I had on my letter sweater from playing football, and I met this fella right in the middle of the grocery store, and he says, does that H stand for Hamilton High School? And I said, yes, sir, it does. I thought he was a football coach going to offer me a scholarship. But he said, I have a book for your librarian. He said, wait here. And so I went ahead and got some groceries. He went out, came back in, and had a little paperback book, and the name of the book was The Jack Tales. And he autographed it and said, give this to your librarian when you go back to school on Monday. Well, I went on home and helped my mom put the groceries away, and I felt that book in my sweater pocket, and I said, I met a fellow that wrote a book, and he wants to give it to my librarian. And she said, Lord, that's Uncle Monroe's book. And I said, no, it's Miss Campbell. He told me to give it to her. She said, well, Uncle Monroe is your dad's uncle, and he's the fellow that told the stories in all this folktale book. And the book was written by Richard Chase. That's the fellow I met in the grocery store. He was part of that. You know, during the Depression, if you couldn't get a job, mm-hmm. you worked for the government, something called the Southern Writers Project.
Yes.
So he went out. First, he thought he'd find dancers, but he didn't. So he went to storytelling. But he found my Uncle Monroe. Everybody in our family calls him Uncle Monroe, whether he's your uncle or not. But he found him and actually put a little, they used to call them house trailers, like a mobile home, in his front yard. And he and his wife lived in it. And every day he would go up and Uncle Monroe would tell him stories. And then he'd run back and she would type them up. And eventually he wrote this book called The Jack Tales, published it about 1940 or 41 or something like that. And then about in the late 40s, 47, maybe, he wrote one called The Grandfather Tales. The first one's every story is about a boy named Jack.
Jack.
The second one are the stories that he found that weren't about Jack. And some of them, it just really strange. He was a scholar. And so when he heard a story, he would go back and research, where does this story come from? One of them is Beowulf. In Mountain Talk, it's called Old Far Dragoman. One of them is King Lear. It's called Meat Loves Salt. They're just references that go back to stories that are thousands of years old.
And there it was in Tennessee.
And there it was
Small
in Tennessee.
Small town Tennessee.
So how did it get there? Well, those people lived way back. They lived in Europe.
Yeah.
And when they came across to America, they brought their quilts and stuff. And in those quilts, I guess they brought their stories because they told the stories the way they remembered them.
Hmm.
And the mountains had the effect on it. You know, they couldn't be quite sure what they had heard over there in England, but they told it the way they wanted to. Well, first of all, let me finish the Jack. I read all the Jack Tales Sunday before I went to school on Monday. And she said, well, you can borrow it anytime you want to. So I did borrow it later and reread some of them. But I have this kid brother who was 12 years younger than me. So at that age, he was about 4 or 5 and, you know, wanted stories. And so I started telling him Jack Tales. Then I got married to a Virginia girl, and we wound up living in Richmond. And we had a couple of kids, and they would always say, Daddy, Daddy, tell us a story. You know, you got Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and you got the Three Little Pigs. I had completely forgotten about the Jack Tales.
The Jack Tales.
Until one night I remembered one, and I told him one Jack Tale. And after that, it was not tell me a story, it was tell me a Jack Tale. And my daughter lives in Seattle, and she'll call once in a while, and we'll talk about Jack Tales coast to coast. And so when she was in the fifth grade, she came home and said, you know, none of the kids in my class have ever heard of a Jack Tale. Could you come and tell them to my class? And I said, well, if it's okay with your teacher. And, of course, the kids liked them. It's hard not to like a Jack Tale. And as I walked out of the fifth grade classroom, there stood the fourth grade teacher saying, you're telling tales to them. Can you do it for me? And so pretty soon the word got around, and I was doing it, you know, right many different schools as well as I could. I'm a teacher. So it was hard during the school year, but in the summer I go to the libraries and that sort of stuff. And finally, after years and years of that, my wife got so fed up with me being gone all the time telling stories. She said, why don't we tell stories together? And we started right here in Harrisonburg at first night. We got a story where we sort of finished each other's sentences. It's two people telling a story together.
It's easy to do when you've been married a while.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. And we told story together here, and after that we just sort of worked into becoming what we call Tales in Tandem. And we go up to the national park, and we go to Wintergreen and places like that and tell.
Do you ever start a story without knowing exactly where it's going?
No.
You have thought it out beforehand.
In my head, I'm not one that that writes them down very often.
What about your style? Like, do you stand up? Do you move around? Do you have gestures? What's your style?
Yes. Every storyteller has their own style. I mean, some of the best ones just stand.
Mm-hmm.
And their stories are so riveting. It doesn't matter. Others do a lot of gesturing. And I do a minimum amount, but I do wave my hands and maybe take a few steps one way or the other. But not a lot.
You let the tale.
The story should carry itself.
Should carry itself.
Right.
Yeah. Could you tell us a Jack Tale?
Oh, Lord. If you've got time. Some of them go on and on and on.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
relatively.
When these people lived up in the mountains there, they didn't have anything except storytelling. They want long stories. Some of them, you start them one day and finish them the next.
And what we can do is, if I run out of time, we'll start it on the air, and then I'll say,
sure.
We're out of time, go to the net.
Okay, let me tell you, and it starts out like all Jack Tales. There's this boy named Jack, and he lived in a little old house with his ma and his pa, and they were real poor. And times was hard. Nobody could find a job anywhere. And so Jack's pa, he decided to go over the mountain to the sawmill. He heard they were hiring over there. But the problem was,
oops, it
was...
we are out of time. Never fear. Max Swiss' telling of this particular Jack Tale is all there on the Spark page at WMRA.org.